Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Georgia has spoken, so our conversation today will touch on the outcome of the Georgia runoff elections and what that outcome means for the direction of policy and the markets, including the response we are seeing in the markets as of this morning. So joining me on the podcast today, glad to welcome Jason Dreho, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, it's great to be with you this morning. I know it was a very eventful evening last night, so looking forward to recapping it with you and talking about what it means for the markets and policy on a going forward basis.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Good to be here after a certainly eventful last evening and still kind of going on this morning. It hasn't been finalized.
Absolutely. So to your point, it does remain very fluid. It sounds like one of the elections it was called, one of them remains outstanding, a rare second runoff, so to speak. So can you bring us up to speed, Jason, in terms of what we know with respect to the results as of now?
So between the two Senate races, the one that was between Raphael Warnock and Kelly Loeffler, that's the one that's been called. Warnock is leading by a little over 1 percentage point with very, very high percentage of the number of votes coming in. In the other election between incumbent David Perdue and challenger John Ossoff, Ossoff is currently leading, but it's a very small margin. The areas in some votes still have to be counted are in areas that typically favor by quite a bit Democrats, so it's likely that his lead could continue to increase, but it could be under the 0.5% sort of margin of victory. When it's less than 0.5%, Canada can request a recount. So it's likely we will see, at least in that particular race, a recount, which will take, another couple of days perhaps to finalize, which means that, it looks like it's going to be an outcome of where both Democrats win. All we know for kind of, high likelihood right now is that one for sure is probably one. The other is likely to win. We think a pretty high probability, but the final decision may take a couple more days.
So as was anticipated, these races, they ended up to be very tight. And to your point, it sounds like we might not know the full composition for another 24 to 48 hours. So I'm curious, given that uncertainty, what the market response has consisted of as of this morning. I've been looking at the futures. They've been relatively mixed. I know the tech-heavy NASDAQ has been selling off a bit pre-market. So what do you make of what we've been seeing in the futures and even rates as well? 10-year Treasury, I believe, is now up over 1%.
So, if we look at start with equities, it had definitely some choppiness in this morning as the market responds to it. And we've seen for the S&P of 100, the futures go from basically being kind of flat or unchanged, as of maybe about 7:30 this morning. Now it's down, as we speak, around minus 46 basis points, so close to 0.5%, but that's chopping around. Bigger move in terms of the NASDAQ. So the futures right now are down around 1.6%, and it had a bigger reaction initially, and it's kind of stayed more negative, overnight into the morning. I think that is partly tied to what we're seeing in the rates markets where there's bigger moves there. The 10-year Treasury yield is up about 6 basis points overnight, and so now it's around 2.7%. That's been driven largely by higher inflation expectations. So those have gone up, for the 10-year had gone up around 4.5 basis points. So the bulk of the move in the 10-year yield, which is now at 1.01%, is up, is due to higher inflation expectations. The reason for that is, it's expected now if the Democrats do have an effective control of the Senate, they would, because they would have 50 seats and the tiebreaking vote is the vice president. The expectation is then that they'd be able to pass more significant or additional fiscal stimulus, especially perhaps as soon as the end of the first quarter. Under that possibility of more stimulus, larger deficits, that's why we're seeing rates go higher. As a result of that, that's kind of affected the performance of equities, because higher rates, all else equal, tend to be negative for growth stocks and tech stocks, because these are very kind of long duration assets. They have cash flows coming in long into the future. So when your interest rates rise, especially longer-term interest rates, that makes those cash flows a little bit less valuable today. So growth stocks, despite what people think or may not be aware of, they tend to be sensitive to interest rate moves. On the flip side, higher interest rates, especially a steeper yield curve, is positive for financials. So we don't necessarily know how U.S. banks will open. We can see in Europe that European banks are up almost 5% today. Because you could probably see it across the board, slightly higher rates and steeper curves. So again, even outside of the U.S., those financial institutions would benefit from those higher rates. So the big move is in the rates markets, and I think that's kind of driving some of the dynamics that we're seeing this morning in the equity markets, with growth and tech selling off more, and banks at least looking like they're probably going to open up in positive territory. Other things, the dollar is at the moment, up slightly. It was down most of this morning on the expectation perhaps of more fiscal stimulus, bigger deficits. That's one reason long-term why the dollar could weaken. But I think, at the moment, given it's sort of chopping around, I think it's too hard to kind of get a good read of what's kind of happening, specifically in terms of the dollar's reaction to this particular news.
So, Jason, looking down the pike a bit more longer term, if candidate John Ossoff does indeed achieve victory within 24, 48 hours, what will be the market implications as well as some potential policy implications if Democrats do control the Senate? You don't have that kind of gridlock within Congress anymore.
That's correct. So what the market is moving today is on the expectation that with a unified government, with the Democrats effectively controlling the legislative agenda, that we will get more fiscal stimulus. Joe Biden has talked about how one of his first priorities is to pass an additional fiscal stimulus deal. He referred to the December package as a, quote, sort of down payment. So that suggests he's going to push for another round of spending. And we did see just last week the debate about how large the kind of stimulus check should be with President Trump and the Democrats pushing for $2,000 a person, up from $600. Perhaps that number could be up as a result, in the next Congress. So that's a possibility. There's other initiatives that some of the Democrats had pushed for, whether they can do that in terms of additional spending on, like, say, climate change, infrastructure. They'll certainly kind of push for that, but I think the magnitude that they can do, given the very slim majority, is going to be less than what they would have done if they had sort of a clear majority of, say, 53 or 54 seats in the Senate. On the flip side, there's going to be a lot of focus on the possibility of higher taxes, and it's likely that there will be some tax increases. An important thing to keep in mind is that given that there's a very slight majority for the Democrats with the vice president voting, that the only thing they can do is kind of pass, say, either spending increases or tax increases to budget reconciliation, which they can only do essentially once a year or for one budget year. So they can do it for 2021 in the first quarter, effectively, and then they can do something for 2022 later this year. So our expectation always been is under a blue wave, they do the spending first, and then the possibility of tax increases would occur not until 2022. I think that's still to be the case. Even with the possibility of tax increases, given the incredibly slim majority, getting agreement among all 50 Democratic senators and what is now a small majority in the House means it will be difficult, I think, to get agreement on what those tax increases should be. For context, the Republicans controlled the White House and Congress after President Trump was elected, and it took them a year just to do tax decreases. So getting a tax increase, I think, is going to be harder still. So while they're likely to happen, I think the magnitude is going to be pretty modest. And so I think on net, we're going to see overall additional fiscal stimulus. And areas potentially of spending in kind of green energy, perhaps more in infrastructure, all of which is, to get additional spending this year, better for economic growth, better for kind of the rotation trade that's been taking place. So as we see this morning, the higher interest rates benefiting maybe some sectors like value, for financials, small cap stocks, which is one of our most preferred, and kind of further pushing us toward thinking that rates could, drift a little bit higher this year. As a result.
So, Jason, from an investor's point of view, there's a lot of moving parts happening right now, and you just walked us through some of the policy implications of Democrats having, of course, control of the House, the executive branch, as well as potentially the Senate, as it's pointing to. And some of those policy items, some might come to fruition sooner than others. So, looking down the pike a bit, and even near term, how should investors think about positioning their portfolios in light of what has transpired in the last 12 hours?
So you made a great point that there's a lot of moving parts, and we just discussed the election outcome. We haven't touched on the fact that the bigger story that's really going to be driving the economy and the markets is, the COVID pandemic and the role of the vaccine, which has gone, in fits and starts and how things are kind of progressing there. So even in the near term, I think the market reaction to the election news will happen, pretty quickly. And then it's going to be a bit of, wait and see in terms of what become the priorities for the administration in terms on the fiscal side, where they want to focus. There's only, given the narrow margins, there's only so many things they can get done and only so much political capital they have. So I think the markets will react as they are doing today in the near term, and then we'll wait for more guidance from the incoming administration on terms of what policies to expect. But I think the bigger story that's going to draw the markets is the pandemic and whether it continues to get worse or better as we expect. Same thing with the vaccine rollout. So in terms of position, I think that's, we still have to sort of focus on that as the main market driver. And right now, we still think that the pandemic will get under control by mid-year. The vaccine rollout will start to improve. Under that case, we expect the economy to do better as the year goes on after some weakness in the first quarter. And now, of course, if we get additional fiscal stimulus later in the first quarter, and that rolls out throughout the year, that's an additional boon to the economic outlook. So I think that today's news doesn't change the main overall view that we're still positive on the economy recovering, positive on equities, you know, doing well for the year, on interest rates likely to drift a little bit higher as the year goes on, and sort of a rotation where you start to see kind of catch up in areas of the equity markets that have lagged, such as small and mid-cap equities, areas of value stocks. Where there still remains to be a little more uncertainty is in things such as, like, say, the energy sector, because it can certainly benefit from an improving global economy, but it also could face some headwinds from additional sort of policy or regulations, which at this point in time, it's harder to determine, you know, what those would entail. Some of that would already be through, you know, executive orders, not through Congress. So that doesn't change, or the results of the past 24 hours don't change. So I think that for investors, what the plan they had, you know, yesterday or day before probably doesn't really change from an overall investment perspective. Really, maybe what they want to maybe focus on more is their personal situation, thinking about potentially tax increases. You know, if that is down the pipeline, how they want to affect, you know, their portfolio in that regard, sort of asset location more so than asset allocation. But otherwise, I think we'll have to monitor the situation and get a better sense first of the policy outcomes before we want to make a bigger change in terms of our overall investment recommendations right now.
Well, Jason, thank you for joining us on this special edition of Top of the Morning to walk us through this very fluid story as far as what we know as of this morning with respect to the results, as well as what the policy and market implications of this outcome might be down the pike. The conversation will indeed continue, but appreciate your insights this morning, Jason, as well as your guidance as far as portfolio positioning.
You're welcome.
And again, this morning we have been joined by Jason Draho, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. As a reminder to our clients and listeners, the UBS Chief Investment Office authors a variety of publications and blogs that touch on timely market developments, asset classes, and portfolio allocation. These resources can be located on ubs.com/CIO, and that includes the special election brief, which covers the Georgia runoff election outcomes that Jason just walked us through. Again, available for you on ubs.com/CIO. For clients of UBS, you can also contact your financial advisor if you would like to learn more or receive a copy of any of the publications and blogs directly. Top of the Morning is part of the UBS Market Moves podcast channel, which is available where podcasts are found, including on iTunes and Spotify. Visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire podcast offering, as well as the new UBS Trending video series. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investor investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.